This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm joined by Christine Ann Flynn, celebrated chef, recipe developer, content creator, and three-time author. She's here today to tell us about her brand new cookbook, Easy Does It. It's fabulous, by the way. And before we dive into that, let me tell you a little bit more about her. As just mentioned, Christine Flynn is a celebrated cookbook author, recipe developer, and content creator. A veteran of the hospitality industry, she graduated at the top of her class from the French Culinary Institute in Manhattan and has worked in kitchens all across the globe from Burgundy to Nantucket. She has a passion for simple recipes, affordable ingredients, loaded pantries, that sounds so good, and cooking for pleasure. Christine lives on the southern shore of Nova Scotia with her family and various farm animals. Before moving to the East Coast, Christine was the proprietor of the Good Earth Winery, partner at the Good Earth Farm in Ontario, and executive chef and partner at IQ Food Co., a restaurant group with multiple locations in Toronto. Christine's work has also appeared in the New York Times, Wired, and Bon Appetit, among others. She's a chef partner with Zing Pantry Shortcuts, and her first book, which I had to get because I couldn't get over the title and the concept, How to Eat with One Hand, fabulous as well, was co-written with Emma Knight and published in 2021. A jack of all trades and veteran of the food industry, Christine has packed years of knowledge into her books. A Generous Meal, her second cookbook, was released in February 2023. And as we mentioned, we are really going to be focusing mostly today on her latest cookbook, Easy Does It. And in it, Christine Flynn takes decades of restaurant experience and distills it into simple strategies that anyone can use to enhance their culinary repertoire and confidence. Easy Does It is about doing more with less. Less effort, less time, less fuss. I love this. And less waste. It's about knowing which corners are worth cutting in the pursuit of mouth-watering food without sacrificing the joy that comes from eating visually stunning and delectable dishes. Christine Ann Flynn, congratulations on all of this and welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thanks for having me.
Christine, I know you were born in Nova Scotia, where you now reside with your family. So I love that full circle moment. That's amazing. And I know that you've, as just mentioned, you've worked in kitchens all across the globe from Burgundy to Nantucket. But what I found fascinating is that you went all the way to New York City to study at the French Culinary Institute as a young chef. What inspired you to journey to New York? That must have been a very heady and thrilling time in your career.
Yeah, well, I'd already worked on Nantucket for a couple of years when I decided to go to culinary school. And we worked extremely long hours in that Nantucket kitchen. It was about 6 days a week, and then I would get one day off. And on my day off, I would usually read. And I would read mostly cookbooks. And it just seemed to me like the place to go if I wanted to really pursue being a chef and really focus on my craft was New York City. It really is, in terms of North America, a culinary mecca. So I made the choice to do a program at the French Culinary Institute. And it was also a shorter program. It was only 6 months, and a lot of programs are a couple of years. But yes, it was incredible. Luckily, I had visited before, and I wasn't just going from sort of backwater Nova Scotia right into downtown Manhattan. But I loved it. It was an amazing experience.
I was wondering, as I was reading about you, do you love the film Julia and Julia, the whole story of Julia Child and the young cookbook author that studies all of those recipes?
Yeah.
Did that ever intrigue you?
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie and I read the book. I do find Julia Child as a person an incredible role model and woman because she just has this amazing history. She didn't meet Paul until she was about 36. She was a spy before that during World War II. And she really never gave up on her goal of writing a cookbook when she started. And a lot of people don't know how onerous it was for her and how much they had to really endure while she was writing this cookbook. So Julie and Julia, great book, great movie, but the actual Julia Child is even better than the story.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? That's so cool. I was fascinated to learn, as I mentioned off the top, about your first cookbook, How to Eat with One Hand, which I was so excited to get my hands on the other day. And I love that it naturally became an instant national bestseller. And as an already renowned chef, you co-wrote it with Greenhouse Beverage Company founder Emma Knight when motherhood took you both by surprise within a few months of each other. And I'm crazy about the recipes in that book, things like a very good hamburger, fairy godmother minestrone. Wow, that sounds dreamy. And the chocolate chip banana cake. Each one sounds better than the next. Can you tell us more about How to Eat with One Hand, where you even offer more to readers than just the recipes, those wonderful essays?
Well, that book to me is very special because even though it wasn't the most commercially successful, that is the book that I will get messages at, you know, sort of 3 a.m. from people who are in the trenches of motherhood relating to the book. Yes. And for me, when Emma and I were writing that book, I was at a stage, I was a single mom when I had my daughters, I have twins, and there wasn't a lot of literature available for twin moms. And there certainly wasn't a lot of literature available for single moms. And I just felt like there was this huge gap in sort of comforting literary nourishment for someone like me. And so Emma and I really put our heads together. And of course, we wanted a cookbook, but we also wanted to write a little bit about what it's really like in a way that felt welcoming, you know, and also you're able to get a few gripes out, but something that felt really relatable to people and really helpful, because I've been a restaurant chef for decades. Going into being a mom, I was pretty organized and cooking wasn't daunting to me, but I realized to a lot of people, even including Emma, I went over to Emma's house before we started even writing the cookbook and we cooked together for when she would have her baby, because she just kind of didn't even know where to start with that. So I realized I kind of had something to offer, and I was really sort of writing the book that I wanted to read.
That's so great. That's always the best place to start. And it's so true about nesting. I mean, I remember, I'm much older than you, I believe, but I remember making tuna casseroles and freezing them before I had my first, and it was just comforting. I don't even know how great the tuna casserole was, but just the idea that it was there, right?
Absolutely. And I think also that book in particular encourages people to offer support to new moms through food. And I also think that that's a wonderful gift, because you may have a tuna casserole in your freezer, but it's also nice when someone kind of drops off that pot of minestrone on your front step. And it just really, it's a wonderful way to show support and love for someone is through food.
You've done this three times, and I bet it was much easier the third. But how did you even start? Is it like you got together and started cooking? You made an outline of the recipes. Like, where does one begin? If any of our listeners are listening and always wanted to create some kind of a cookbook, even if it's just one that you distribute amongst your family members, you know, how do you start? It just seems like such a daunting task.
Well, it's certainly not for the faint of heart. And every time you do it, there are some surprises. But I think a really important piece, it's a bit like putting together a puzzle where you need those corner pieces. So you need sort of an overarching theme. And then I think the most important part is to sort of figure out basically your table of contents. And that's what I do, is I write a sort of a mock table of contents around some recipes or an idea I'm really thinking of. I'm not a diagnosed ADHD, but I will say that I usually have about 20 different ideas going on in my brain at once. So I've got at least three cookbook ideas on the go. But I just keep a document open and a tab, actually. And every time I think of something that fits the theme, I sort of think, oh, well, I want to write this East Coast cookbook. I made these potato rolls. I'm going to drop that in. And the book will sort of reveal itself to you. Yeah. I'm kind of loosey-goosey about it. But as long as you have that structure, once you finally get your sort of table of contents set, you don't have to have the recipes done. You just have to have the ideas. you can really start writing. And an actual cookbook, a first draft, is only about 30,000, 40,000 words. So it's actually pretty manageable. You just have to kind of set aside the time and stick to it and have that overarching structure in place.
I think you have a very organized mind. I can tell just by the way you're describing this, because mine would be like on a napkin here, on a matchbook there. So that's really impressive. You went on then, Christine, to write a national bestseller called A Generous Meal, Modern Recipes for Dinner, that became a Globe and Mail top 100 book of 2023. Congratulations on that as well. And it was also the Taste Canada Cookbook winner for single subject cookbooks. Can you tell us what it was like to see those recipes and stories published as a national bestseller? Like what?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was pretty great. I don't know about you, Judy, but I found COVID a little difficult. And I was at home with my girls, who at the time that COVID kind of hit, they were about two and a half. And my friend Brylin lived with me. I had a friend come and live with me so that I could leave the house to walk my dog and things like that. Like I was really kind of cobbling it together, but I'd gotten the contract to write this book. And even though parts of that time were so difficult, I have so many happy memories of my roommate, like coming down, she's like eating cookie dough out of the fridge. And she was like my little guinea pig. And so we had this like little test kitchen. And if you look at that cookbook, even though it really does have like a luxe feel to it, there's a lot of velvet and there's a lot of brass. Mm. And I really wanted it to feel kind of just like elegant. So many of the recipes are cabbage, beans, chicken thighs. It was whatever I could get at No Frills and sort of make something amazing during that time, because I couldn't go. I was living in Beamsville. There was no Pusateri's in Beamsville. There was like, there's no like fancy grocery stores, but also it was like what we could afford. And so when people, again, kind of connected with that book, and when it even made these bestseller lists, it felt really great. And it felt like a win for the little guy, you know?
Of course.
Yeah.
And you were doing for people what Schitt's Creek did for people who were stuck at home during COVID. Like I personally watched Schitt's Creek, I don't know, 800 times or something. It was my favorite guilty pleasure. But let's face it, during COVID, what did you look forward to? Yeah. Meals, right? Yeah. Especially like the dinner meal. That was so exciting because there were no restaurants and going out. So it became all of it. You facilitated that for people, which is so awesome.
Yeah, it was a really, I don't know. I mean, we're always, you have to be aware that no matter what you're going through, you're going to look back and think that was awesome. You know, like there were parts of it that was great. And again, I don't want to say that all of it was great, but I do think that there were some really magical moments. And to this day, I don't live with an adult roommate anymore. My husband, but my friend Brylin, who lived with me, we still message each other. And we still send each other photos of like food that we're cooking. Or if I make a big batch of cookie dough, I always let her know that it's in the fridge. And I mean, it can always be a special time. And I think food's such an important part of that.
Of course. Of course. Well, I almost fell over when I read about the caramel pecan ice cream crumble cake. Just the title itself. How do you dream up these delightful recipes? And how fun was it to recipe develop and taste test that one in particular?
That one's a good one. So that one I actually tried at a potluck at my mom's, and it's one of her friend's recipes that I sort of tweaked a little bit. But so that one was definitely, I got inspired by someone else. And that's another beautiful part of cooking, is you're constantly getting inspired and you think, okay, how am I going to make that my own? Or a lot of the recipes in there where there's someone who's directly inspired, they get credit too. And it almost feels like they're cooking with you, which is really nice.
Lovely.
And I love cooking and I love eating. So
So great. Well, we're here, of course, to talk about your third cookbook and your latest offering, which has also become an instant national bestseller. Your newest cookbook is called Easy Does It. What a great title. And in it, you offer 98 simple recipes packed with personality that also help people save time and money without sacrificing flavor or style. Can you tell us a little bit more about the inspiration behind Easy Does It? This is post-COVID.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I did start working on the outline of it during COVID. So I was working on that before A Generous Meal even came out, but it kept evolving. And what happened was I got the job working at the winery. around the time that COVID was ending. So I ended up working in Beamsville full time. And one of my jobs was teaching cooking classes. And I noticed with my students, all of which for the most part were people who were very interested in food, people who cooked regularly, but there were a lot of things that tripped them up or that they were intimidated by. And I really tried in my classes to sort of break this down for people or kind of explain like how I could do things so quickly. And so a lot of the sort of feedback I was getting directly on the ground from my community, I put into the cookbook and their favorite recipes and the things that resonated with them, I tried to include it all. And I also think that because I was working so much, I started dating my husband. I had a child. We got married. We moved twice. There was
just a few little things, just a few minor. Right?
There's a lot going on. And so pressure makes diamonds, as I'm sure you know, Judy. But I think that the big thing for me was that the kind of recipes that I was able to create, they had to be affordable. They had to be quick because it's not like I could do these Noma style recipes with like 17 ingredients where you're foraging in the woods. I'm lucky if I'm yanking some herbs out of the backyard. So it really was, it's a simplified cookbook. It's affordable and it's really meant to be supportive to people and to teach them. You don't have to be too dogmatic about following a cookbook. Of course, I want you to buy cookbooks, especially Canadian cookbooks. But this is a book that hopefully you use it and you love it. And some recipes you go back to again and again. But hopefully sometimes you can just leave it on the shelf and you can look at what you have and sort of think back and springboard into something creative and delicious because you already know how to make delicious food from the book.
What are some of the things that do trip people up? Like, what are the common things that people just go, oh, I can't, too overwhelming?
People worry about having the exact right ingredient, which was something my stepmother, who is an incredible cook, she doesn't cook very many things, but she cooks a few things and she cooks them very well. She'll message me, you know, I'm on the speed dial, and she'll say, well, I don't have sumac. I can't make this. And I say, don't worry about it. You know, just put in a splash of vinegar. And I think giving people ideas for how they can make something, even like a cake, people get very intimidated by baking. Yes. And let me tell you, baking is a science, but it's not an exact science. And if a recipe calls for yogurt, you can use sour cream. You can use milk with some vinegar in it so that it still has that acidity kick.
Yes.
But I think not having the exact right ingredient. And I think too, sometimes people just think beautiful food is difficult and it's not. You just put some stuff on a platter and sprinkle some crispy onions on top and some herbs. Like it looks great. So, you know, I've really tried to kind of debunk some of the myths and really encourage people to use what you have and to just cook with your intuition a little bit.
My late grandma Lily, who my daughter Lily was named after, used to make the most simple thing, little white vanilla cakes with Cool Whip or whipped cream on them and strawberries in the middle layer and on top. Nothing fancy, but I have never tasted anything so good. Maybe it's just the memory of that, of I was so close to her. But just, you know, this was all homemade to all things that she sort of had at the ready, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
it's amazing.
Birthday cakes have evolved in our house. My twins now are 9. They'll be 9 in June. And my youngest daughter, Theodora, she'll be 3 in the fall. But, you know, when they're little, you're going to all these birthday parties, unless there's a pandemic. But it's, you know, it's all these fancy cakes and a lot of frosting. And my girls are like, Mom, I want a white cake. I want whipped cream and I want a little jam. And it's easy, you know, and they love it. And I don't even tell them it's like chia jam, you know, it's literally raspberries with some maple syrup and some chia seeds. But simple is good. And a creative thought can still be concise. And similarly, simple food can still be very complex in flavor.
Yes, absolutely. Is there a recipe in the book, Christine, in this latest book, Easy Does It, that feels like home to you, like a memory that you can taste?
Well, it's kind of a funny one, but when I first started dating my husband, he would send me recipes. Which is really funny. You know, you're kind of having the conversation, you're trying to figure out if you like each other. You know, I had 2 kids, so I'm like, I don't know if this guy's serious or not. But so he would send me video recipes. And one of them was Turkish eggs. And so Turkish eggs, it's yogurt. It's a little bit of like a chili oil and it's eggs and some herbs. And so every time we have that, I remember kind of like those early days, and we'd get together and we'd cook something. So that's a really, like, it's a special one. And it's also so easy. It takes like 4 minutes. So that I would say is really good.
So cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. What is different now with this third cookbook? And what have you learned from doing two before this simplified your life? And what is one of the tricks of the trade that you've learned in this third cookbook?
Well, I think that it's important to really go all in. I mean, I think I've done that on every single book, which is why they're all so different, because they're all from very different phases of my life. But in this world that we're living in, people are looking for things that feel genuine and things that feel real. And I'm one of these people, if you meet me in real life, I'm a little bit off the wall, and I'm always like all into everything. But I think with the books, it really helps. And it's okay to make mistakes and to kind of operate on the edge of your knowledge, because at least if you fail, you're failing forward. And I think, you know, these books are, they are a little out there. There isn't another cookbook for expectant and new mothers who are twin mothers and also single, you know? And so I think just like niching down and being really specific about what you do, and being really comfortable with the fact that you're allowed to be a little weird, and that's what makes it interesting.
Absolutely. I was going to get to this in a second, but I have to say that you wrote a piece published on May 1st, 2019, which is so full of pathos and is so relatable and compelling. And it's all about you giving birth to your twin daughters. And what a beautiful and incredible ride it's been, especially when you share that vulnerable time during that period. And I know you're about to write a novel. So at first I was like, wow. And when I read that piece, I thought, now I get why she's writing it. You're a beautiful writer.
Thank you.
So I think you are a natural born writer. Can you tell us how you felt when you wrote that piece? And have you always wanted to write a novel, or is that something that developed after you started writing pieces like that one?
Well, as a child, we also moved a lot. Again, I was born in Nova Scotia, but my family moved to the UK when I was 4. And with every move, we kind of moved houses multiple times because money was always tight. And I took great comfort in books. And I think I was part of that. I'm an 80s baby, early 80s, 80s baby. But, you know, we didn't have screens. We had books and we had nature. And I took great comfort from these characters in books. I loved Anne M. Montgomery books. Anything with an orphan, sign me up. I don't know why.
Oh, me too.
Emily of New Moon.
I read Anne of Green Gables.
So good.
So good. So good.
And so I think also like a lot of these heroines in the books were also writers. And so for me, I think it was a natural idea that one day I would write. But I also think at that age, at like 13 or 14, I didn't have much to write about. And in sort of this kind of pursuit of learning and food and travel, I've accumulated a lot of stories. And now I feel like I really have something to say. And I feel like I can kind of share with other people a peek behind the curtain, particularly as it relates to restaurants. My novel, it takes place in a winery, actually, a winery restaurant. And I have so many great stories, and I've met so many incredible people, and I've been in strange and wonderful situations. And so now it feels very natural to write about it and to write, again, from a place of being authentic and also a little weird.
Will you come back when that novel's out? Because I can't wait to read it. And I'd love to have you back on to talk about that. That's great. I found that so intriguing. And I sort of got the idea when I read that article that you wrote about the twins.
Yeah.
And I just thought, my goodness, she's a writer. She's more than
the
cookbook is, of course, writing. But there's something beautiful here. Are there any pantry staples that you rely on again and again throughout the book, like the Buzz Pot Honey, which everyone, I have to tell you, is Christine's product, right?
Yes, I always have a jar of Buzz Hot Honey around. But it's funny, I was thinking about this morning because I'm always reaching in the fridge and grabbing something. But I have said to a couple people, like, vinegar is a big one for me. I think a lot of times people forget that they can season with acid in the same way that you can season with salt. So I love vinegar. It's affordable. It's a very democratic ingredient, right? Like, pretty much everyone can afford a little vinegar, and it can really amp up the flavor and things. And just kind of add a little sparkle. But I also within sort of wanting to be frugal at times, especially if you're moving or having a new baby, you can often find vinegar in other things. So I'm a big fan of dill pickle juice. I use it, like I make dill pickle juice eggs, which like you, instead of like pickled eggs, dill pickle juice eggs, or pepperoncini brine I'll often use. Because we always have pepperoncini around. They're delicious. They're great on pizza. They're great in sort of, I don't know, do you remember those like East Side Mario salads in like 1997? Yes. We make those at home. But like, yeah, I always have like the brine. It was so good. There was like two every time. But yeah, things like pickle juice, pickle brine, it's basically free. So I always have those. I always have chickpeas. I always have rice and not strictly a pantry item, but I always have cabbage. Because you could make a salad, you could roast
purple?
It. Green.
Green cabbage.
Green cabbage, yeah. And because you could always get a meal on the table. Like last week, I made my husband charred green cabbage with a peanut miso chili crisp topping.
Wow.
And like he ate an entire cabbage. So it's really like if you treat cabbage well, it treats you well. But yeah, I always have cabbage around. Quick salad, quick slaw, nice roast. You can use it as like a wrap. It's just, it's the best. So I would say it's a pantry ingredient, but it's more of a counter ingredient.
I have a Scottish relative and I used to say, what are you going to have for dinner? Corned beef and cabbage.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
That's a nice combo.
Yeah.
That's delicious. I also was so intrigued when I read that you actually help people write cookbooks. So everyone listen to this if you've ever had this dream, by offering a full range of services from in-person coaching to full-scale ghostwriting services.
Yeah.
I found that so intriguing.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
Don't answer that just yet. We'll have more with Christine and Flynn when we come back. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. And just before the break, Christine, you were telling us about the ghostwriting and testing services that you offer. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I haven't done a full ghostwrite for anyone because everyone who comes to me is basically, they have their recipes and their ideas, but I will do a lot of testing and I will help them refine their voice and kind of get the final document smoothed out, I would say.
Nice.
But I love recipe testing. It's one of my favorite things because you get to just go like full type A. And I'm always interested to see what other people know. I recently did recipe testing for a chef from the West Coast. His name is Han. And he's Taiwanese-Romanian, which is a really interesting combination.
What a combination, yeah.
His food is phenomenal. And he's self-publishing a cookbook, so he needed an extra set of eyes. And his recipes were so good and used techniques and ideas that they weren't so far outside my wheelhouse, but I'd never seen them exactly like that before. And so I love doing recipe testing because I'm helping someone, but I'm also learning. And I just think that that's such a beautiful way to work.
That's so awesome. You love cooking, don't you? What do you
really
love about it?
I love that it's a little problem I can solve every day. Because, you know, the world can just be so overwhelming. And it often feels like we're in this cycle where we go from one thing that's frightening or overwhelming to the next thing. And you have to kind of pull back and say, remember when we were all worried about Korea, you know, or something? Yeah. And you have to be like, nothing happened, you know, and you have to kind of like pull back or pull yourself out of it. And I find when I can get out of my head and into my hands, I'm really not worried about anything. It's the same reason I love knitting. But for cooking, like I'm able to really focus on something, I'm able to nourish the people around me. And I also find it to be like a fun little puzzle. Like, I wish people would just invite me to their house and let me cook whatever's in the fridge, because it's just, it's my favorite thing. It's like a little black box challenge.
Do you love to go to knitting stores and buy the yarn? Like,
yes.
I'm also a knitting lover. And
I didn't know
but
that.
Not great at it. My grandma was a knitting. She used to knit baby pink mohair sweaters for every one of our friends and family and relatives. All the girls, of course.
Yes.
I don't know, maybe some boys as well. I don't know. But she knitted these beautiful pink mohair sweaters, and just a natural, like not even, I don't think she even looked, you know, knit one pearl. Like, I don't think there was even any looking. It was all sort of through feeling.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
I love it. I think with the book launch, I've been so busy because there's a ton of marketing and PR, which is great. And I'm happy to do it. But I've been like, oh, I haven't been able to knit as much as I normally do. But yeah, I love it. I love like shopping for yarn, touching the yarn. We actually have sheep here, and I keep joking that I'm growing my own sweater, but we're not quite at that stage yet. But I'd love to learn, and it's just, it's a great hobby.
And it's so relaxing. It's so tranquilizing. Mm-hmm. Julia Roberts does it on film sets. You know, the whole thing is the hurry up and wait on a film set, and she just knits her way through hours and hours where otherwise you're just, you know, you'd be on your phone.
Yeah.
It's so great because what you're talking about is all these wonderful homespun things that make you not be scrolling and be on your phone, but be keeping your hands busy. And what I love about you, Christine, is you also teach a lot of this. You offer all of these courses. Like, you're offering a course in knitting and sewing as well, right?
I am. Yeah, you're good, Judy. So where I am, just outside of Mahone Bay, there's an amazing yarn shop. And I'm in there every week, right? Because I'm always working on something. But I really love the Scandinavian kind of Nordic style knitting. So I'm teaching color work. So how people can change from one color to another, which I think, again, much like cooking, people get it in their heads that it's so technical or they can't do it. But you can. Anyone can do anything. And so that's the energy I'm bringing to the course. And it starts in May. I'll be teaching some lovely local people. I'll bring snacks, of course. And we get to just sit in a studio and learn how to do a tubular bind off.
Awesome. I wish I lived there. I would come to it. Christine, can you tell us also about your upcoming event, Writing from the Kitchen, an online culinary writer's circle, which you're going to be offering from Wednesday, May 6th to Wednesday, May 27th. And is that one online or is that one in person?
That one's actually online. So I've taught a few online writing courses and I really love them because I find it helps with my writing practice as well.
Yes.
And I just meet really interesting people. You know, the type of people that sign up for my courses are top tier people. So I think a lot of people come, they have an idea, they want some coaching, but they also want the accountability of showing up somewhere week after week. So this one is more of a writer circle. It's going to be light on the lecture, but each week we'll kind of talk about a different sort of like setting the scene or describing food. And we leverage kind of the breakout rooms in Zoom and people make really great connections. And yeah, they're just a ton of fun. And you just always learn something from them. And it feels good, even though it's online. After COVID, I was like, oh, no more Zoom. But I actually really enjoy it.
Totally.
And you can connect with people really far away. You know, we have more in common than we think. And I think that's a really nice thing too.
It's so true. We also do our show live at Zoomerplex in Liberty Village, downtown Toronto.
Oh, great.
But because of COVID, we do this as well. And this way you have access to international people. And it's so nice because not everyone can come to Liberty Village to do an interview, but
100%.
We can do this, which is so cool. So I wanted to also ask you, so many things to ask you about. There was a year of your life when you were eating much more plant-based foods. How did you go from your classic French culinary training rooted? I'm a Quebecer. I'm born in Montreal, Quebec. So, you know, red meat, creams and heavy sauces, French, to more of that vegan chapter. What precipitated that and how would you describe that period?
Well, when I was in the US, I was actually running two different restaurants by the end of my time there. So one was on the mainland in Amherst, Massachusetts, and one was on the island. And it was kind of a seasonal swap thing. But I started to notice that we were getting more and more people who were gluten-free and vegan. And as a young cook, I think I had a bit of an ego about it, if I'm being honest with you. And so when the opportunity came to sort of take a step back and move to working in more of like a health and wellness space in restaurants. I really jumped at it because I realized that there was a big gap in my knowledge. And so I just kind of went all in. And I set the limitation before I really understood what was required of eating completely plant-based. And I definitely used a lot of those sort of gateway foods at the beginning, which now, as someone who does eat everything but tries really not to eat anything too processed, I wouldn't eat. Because, of course, there's lots of vegan foods like Pillsbury crescent rolls or Oreo cookies or some of those meats that are made in a lab that are heavily processed. And now it's like, I would rather have some grass-fed beef, you know? But yeah. So yeah, I certainly leveraged the gateway foods for a little while, but I do think that that chapter in my life taught me a lot about vegetables. If you look at any of my cookbooks, meat is still, it's more meat as condiment or it's not every day. And even here at our little farm, we eat meat maybe a few times a week. Because it's just vegetables are so great and there's so many other things, and feeding five people, like, it can be really expensive.
Absolutely. You've also had a very cool period where you created this satirical Instagram account, Chef Jacques Lamerde, which scored over 128K followers in just under a year. Oh my goodness. And then of course the big reveal. How exciting was it to be invited to go to Hollywood and be a guest judge on Top Chef season 13 and then to reveal that in fact, this mother who makes salad, and as you say, all these vegetables, was in fact the person behind the Jacques Lamerde account.
Yeah, that was fun. It was a real whirlwind. And I think it taught me a little bit about going viral and things like that. Because that was the beginning before it was social media was even really a thing. But most of all, I think it taught me that, again, you can niche down, you can be super specific, you can be weird, and people will love it because people can connect to it. And when you talk about specificity, especially as it relates to life in the kitchen, so many people have worked in restaurants and so many people have had similar experiences to something that might feel totally unique to you.
Absolutely. That's so cool. What I also love, Christine, is like you go from vegetables to meat to even junk food. So you've even used tweezers, everybody. This is really true. To plate your dishes, tweezers, wow. But in this case, your dishes, in this specific case, weren't exactly fine French cuisine. At the time, you were plating chips and candies from the convenience store. Can you give us an example of one of your most fabulous plated junk food treats and indulgences?
Well, there was a plate that I did for Velveeta, and they reached out to me. They wanted to work with me at the time, and I was still anonymous because it was satirical. But I ended up doing kind of like a different textures of Velveeta plate, and it was dehydrated Velveeta. It was just regular Velveeta. It was foam Velveeta. And that one was really fun, and that image, I mean, it was everywhere for a minute. So it was really fun. Cool. But also I was just going to work every day and doing the thing. And yeah, so it was a fun time. And I got to travel a lot, which was really interesting, and meet a lot of people and just enjoy something different.
Nice. Okay, so I have a great Velveeta recipe that we used to make this hors d'oeuvre years ago when my parents had a dinner party. And it would be take a piece of Wonder Bread.
Yep.
Put Velveeta all over the inside, butter on the outside, take a piece of canned asparagus in the middle,
okay,
roll it up with a toothpick, stick it under the broiler.
I mean, it sounds like the 70s. And the thing about me too is I do legitimately love all food, and I love sometimes the idea of food. Again, there's foods that I'm just like, no thanks, but I really love food that sort of is unabashedly kind of kitschy, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I think that that is so enjoyable. And I much prefer something like that than you get these foods now from places that are pretending that they're good for you. And they're really not. They're full of stuff. But like, give me a piece of Velveeta every once in a while. Like, I'm not mad at it.
Totally, totally. I understand you also have a beautiful new child with your husband. You have three girls. You must have the best hand-me-downs and the best, how fun is that to have three girls? I just think that'd be really cool. What prompted you to move with your children, your chickens, and all of your stuff from Ontario to Nova Scotia?
Well, so we were working in a winery. There was a lot kind of happening, and it was one of those things where you have an idea of how it's going to go, and it just totally went the other way. And so we're living at the winery when it sold. So we didn't really have a place to live and we were both out of work. And wow. So, and we had a new baby. So it just seemed like a good time to take advantage of not having anything and think about, well, what would we like to do? And beautiful. I had always wanted, after I'd lived in Berlin and New York and all these places, I'd always, you know, I'd pictured myself with some kind of access to land. I love the idea of a garden. I still don't totally have a green thumb. But so we were able to purchase a 19th century potato farm here. Oh, and we bought the house. My mom lives about 20 minutes away. So she came over and looked at the house. We bought it sight unseen, but it had great beams. And in one of the photos on the bookshelf, there were James Herriot books and also Little House on the Prairie books. And I was like, this is the house for me.
I sold.
So, yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of stuff for us to figure out. I ended up getting a contract to go and be the creative culinary director for Canada for the Hanover Mess, which is the largest tech festival in the world, tech conference, I guess. So we kind of wrapped up in Ontario. Went to Germany for like 10 days and did this huge kind of series of events there representing Canada, which was amazing. And then about a year ago, we got here and we've been here ever since, just sort of figuring it out. And yeah, Oscar jumped right into work as a contractor, my husband, and I've just been figuring out like writing books and teaching courses and then doing a lot of recipe development or recipe editing for other people.
That's so awesome. Do any of your profs or teachers from that Manhattan cooking school, have you kept in touch with any of them? They must be so thrilled with your success.
Well, it actually closed. It got absorbed by another culinary school, but I'm still in touch with a lot of my other classmates. Nice. And I bumped into my friend Shahir the other day when I was in Toronto. But yeah, so there's a bunch of us who stay in touch. And what's really nice, though, about the group of students I was in is like everyone's doing great. And that's what you hope for. Like everyone who's still cooking is doing incredible things. So there was, I guess, something in the water there.
Magic in the air. Yeah. Magic in the air. That's really, really cool. I love that. We talked about the Maker's Retreat, right? Did we talk about the Maker's Retreat?
No, we didn't. We should, though.
I love this. People, so everyone,
are you coming?
I really want to come now. I do. People who enjoy things like knitting. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sewing can come together in a scenic and beautiful storied environment to exchange ideas and techniques and develop lifelong friendships. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So someone who's become very important to me in the last 10 years is my friend Natasha. She's an incredible photographer. She's in Niagara. I don't think I would have been able to write the cookbooks without her, because when the girls were little and it was COVID, she would take them overnight and like feed them pizza and I would write all my recipes. And she has just been such an incredible friend. And we've ended up traveling together a few times and just loved it. And people are always like, are you guys together? Like, what's going on? And we're like, no, we both have husbands and we love them, but we also just like hanging out together.
We're besties. Yeah.
Yeah. And we just have like such a nice pace of travel together. But we decided to basically launch a series of experiences where other people who love making stuff, love photography, and love walking, which is a huge thing for me, we kind of take over a pub or a manor somewhere and we all get together and we just make things and hang out and drink tea. So we're actually putting together a retreat in Cornwall for 2027 for fall. We're just finalizing the accommodation.
Cornwall, Ontario?
Cornwall, Ontario?
No, Cornwall, England.
Okay.
Paris, Ontario? No. So we're going to go to England and we picked a place and we have a friend who's kind of on the ground there who is doing a bunch of the research and she leads walking tours. So it's just kind of like a perfect, more than the sum of its parts sort of thing. But I just feel a calling to do this. And I think, again, there are a lot of people right now who need a break, who need to get out of their head and into their hands. And there are people who just, you know, want to connect. And anytime I've been on a retreat, my husband will kind of like side-eye me, but I'm like, I need it. I got to go. I need to hang out with like other people and not worry about my husband or my kids or any of this stuff. I need to regenerate for a minute. So we're putting that together to give other people that gift.
Wow. That's so great. That's just so great. What is the greatest golden nugget, Christine, that you'd love people to take away from your latest third cookbook, Easy Does It?
you can do it. Really. And I think that cooking can really be a microcosm for your whole life. But yeah, I said it before. It's like anyone can do anything. And you're not always going to have the right ingredients. You're not always going to have enough time. But like, you can get it on the plate. You know what I mean?
It's yeah. so fun just to go through your cookbooks and even just imagine, like, never mind actually doing it, which I can't wait, but just to imagine making some of these things. And that's always a very good sign of a good cookbook when it just makes you dream and get all yeah. excited about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really wonderful.
Insofar as I have a lot of restaurant background, I really think that a key piece of me writing this book has been just being a mom and a busy person, because you can have all the training in the world, but when it's 5 o'clock and there's like four people looking at you, like, what's for dinner?
Looking at you.
You know, there's starving, there's a really great quote by an author called Lori Colwin that is, mothers invent by necessity. And I think that that's a real through line in all the books.
That's so wonderful. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Christine and Flynn?
I think I'm honestly at my most blissful when I'm just feeling kind of calm and like, like everyone's needs, including mine, are met, I would say.
Nice. Are you a meditator?
No, but I should be. It's on the list of things where I'm like, I'll get to it. But yes. Yeah, I should. I should.
Because you seem like a pretty chill person.
Sometimes.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Aren't we all? What's next for you, Christine? You've got so much on the go. What's your actual next thing? And when is this book going to be ready? The novel?
I'm 35,000 words in. So wow. I'd say about a third. But next for me, I mean, I do want to finish that book, lots of classes. And in the summer, we kind of operate a little, like a, almost like a communal table in our backyard. So that kind of pops off and people come and pet our pigs and we just like do live fire cooking. So we get pretty busy in the summer, which is people coming through and cooking for them. But I think one of the things of my life is I never totally know what's around the corner. And I find when there's space for things, they arrive. So that's really, yeah, I don't know what's next. I'm going to finish the book.
And you're going to call us because we want to have you back for sure to talk about it. That would be so awesome. What's the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, your website, and of course, get copies of your beautiful cookbooks?
Yeah, well, you can order the cookbook wherever books are sold, and it's available pretty much worldwide, which is amazing. And if you want to contact me directly, you can head to my website, which is www.christineandflynn.com. And I am on Instagram a reasonable amount, and I do check my messages. So those are all great ways. Or if you're on the South Shore of Nova Scotia, it's pretty easy to figure out where I live. You just stop by.
That's so great. That's so great. I want to thank you so much. It's really been so delightful to have you on the show today. It really
thank
has.
You.
And I'm so happy you were here. Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Christine Ann Flynn, who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anybody who has found and is following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer, songwriters, and musicians on this show. If you're a singer, please reach out to us. Also, what did you love about today's program? I think that's easy. Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Just write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I help you gain clarity, get unstuck, find your passion and purpose. Just reach out to me. You can reach out to me on Instagram at The Bliss Minute. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. All you have to do is search up Judy Lee Breck. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Don't go anywhere just yet. When we come back, singing us out of the show is Christine's other half, Oscar, and his solo project, Drifter. He's singing us out of the show with his original song, Summer Breeze. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Find Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. And to sing us out of the show today, we have an original song by Drifter, the passionate solo project of singer-songwriter and guitarist Oscar Anderson Short, blending soulful vocals with folk intimacy, R&B grooves, and pop sensibilities. Drifter crafts raw, heartfelt songs about love, loss, desire, and the messy realities in between. This song, Summer Breeze, was produced with the help of Max Forster in a bedroom in Beamsville, Ontario, mixed and mastered by Russ Donahue at Stonehouse Recording. So without further ado, here is Christine Ann Flynn's other half to sing us out of the show with Summer Breeze.
Just a little more. Thought I was done for. Then I see you. And suddenly I feel like none of this is real anymore. I lose all my weight. I become displaced. I float about. Could this be a dream or not? As it seems, I'm into you. Darling, I'm into you. All alone, I'll scour my phone for a sign of you.
Yes, I do.
Suddenly it hit right under my ribs, and I cringe. I look to my left, and it's lost its effect. I shatter her. My life through a mind of dough.
I would love to thank our wonderful guests today, Christine and Flynn, for being on the show. As well, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kylie, producer Lori Quinn, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannuziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. And as well, thank you to Garrett Flores for the gorgeous pink roses that are on our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.